Why do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door? With a thousand million questions about hate and death and war. 'Cause when we stop and look around us, there is nothing that we need. In a world of persecution that is burning in its greed. It's not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way that you mean it when you tell me what will be. And when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, to lose the love I knew could safely lead me through. Between the silence of the mountains and the crashing of the sea, there lies a land I once lived in, and she's waiting there for me. But in the gray of the morning, my mind becomes confused between the dead and the sleeping and the road that I must choose. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, to lose the love I knew could safely lead me to the land that I once knew. The land as we grow old, the secrets of our soul. It's not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way you really mean it when you tell me what will be.
following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Oh, boy. And today on Comey Day, I'm just exhausted. I've been sitting in this chair. Really, since about 6 o'clock this morning, because I woke up, I had to knock out a What's News segment and get that up and running. So I was ready at 10 o'clock for when Comey took the stand, or the witness table at the Senate Intelligence Committee, to testify on all things Trump and Russia and everything else. And I recorded the thing. I took copious notes, I mean, pages and pages of notes, and pulled out all the hits, the greatest hits. We'll go through them today, because I know a lot of people, you got to work. You couldn't sit here for 3 hours. Actually, it was about 2.5, and listen to all the testimony. So, that's why I'm here, isn't it? It's Thursday, so Howie Klein will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. I thought we'd just start. Well, let's start at the very beginning, shall we?
He told me repeatedly that he had talked to lots of people about me, including our current attorney general, and had learned that I was doing a great job and that I was extremely well-liked by the FBI workforce. So it confused me when I saw on television the president saying that he actually fired me because of the Russia investigation. And learned again from the media that he was telling privately other parties that my firing had relieved great pressure on the Russia investigation. I was also confused by the initial explanation that was offered publicly, that I was fired because of the decisions I had made during the election year. That didn't make sense to me for a whole bunch of reasons, including the time and all the water that had gone under the bridge since those hard decisions that had to be made. That didn't make any sense to me. And although the law required no reason at all to fire an FBI director, the administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader. Those were lies, plain and simple.
So Jim Comey comes out of the gate alleging that Donald Trump lied, defamed not only him personally, but the FBI, which he seemed to take greater offense to. It was a pretty stunning few hours, although if you listened to Trump's lawyer, Mark Kasowitz, they were listening to something different than I was. If you checked in, if you listened to the testimony today and you want to weigh in, feel free. The phone lines are open, 954-889-6410, or you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler. I saw the whole thing. What's stunning is Kasowitz, who is Trump's personal attorney, is doubling down, saying that Trump was vindicated, he was not, and that Comey was lying. Now, I don't believe he was. And in fact, at one point he was asked, I've got so many notes here. Like, how do you know? Why should we believe you over him? And he says, well, take everything in context, really. That's not one that I pulled. But I thought what we do is go through some of each of the questioners and some of the answers and the things that I think are newsworthy. I honestly haven't listened to any of the analysis after the hearing. Once the hearing ended, I just opened my notes and I opened the recording and I started pulling clips, and all of a sudden it's 3 o'clock in time to go on the air. Do I think that Comey made a case of absolute obstruction of justice? No, but he did answer some questions. And does it look bad for Trump? Yeah. Do I think it looks bad for anybody else? I think it looks bad for Jeff Sessions and Mike Pence, too. In fact, I'll jump around a little bit. Here's one. Ron Wyden was the only one who asked a question about Mike Pence. Now, I'm concerned about Pence because I do believe Trump will not last 4 years, please, Please don't let him last 4 years. But the scary part is, if he were to be thrown out of office today, we get President Pence, who on many fronts is even scarier than President Trump, even though it seems hard to believe it's there. Anyway, well, here's the question from Ron Wyden.
Vice President Pence was the head of the transition. To your knowledge, was he aware of the concerns about Michael Flynn prior to or during General Flynn's tenure as National Security Advisor?
You're asking, including up to the time when Flynn was forced to resign? My understanding is that he was, and I'm trying to remember where I get that understanding from. I think from Acting Attorney General Yates.
Uh-huh, who was also fired, right? Let's go through it. The first person to ask questions was Richard Burr. He is the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And, let's start here.
Do you have any doubt that the Russian government was behind the intrusions in the DNC and the DCCC systems and the subsequent leaks of that information?
No doubt.
Do you have any doubt that the Russian government was behind the cyber intrusion into state voter files?
No.
That's a biggie.
Do you have any doubt that officials of the Russian government were fully aware of these activities?
No doubt.
No doubt.
Are you confident that no votes cast in the 2016 presidential election were altered?
I'm confident. By the time when I left as director, I'd seen no indication of that whatsoever.
All right. So he said, yes, the Russians were fully involved. They were breaking in. They hacked the DNC and the DCCC. But the one thing that he didn't see any evidence of before he left was tampering with the votes. Well, we know that goes on anyway, right? We don't need the Russians to do that. But a number of times throughout the hearing, Comey sounded a similar alarm. This is a question from Senator Angus King of Maine.
Was the Russian activity in the 2016 election a one-off proposition, or is this part of a long-term strategy? Will they be back?
Oh, it's a long-term practice of theirs. It stepped up a notch in a significant way in 16. They'll be back.
Uh-oh. I think that's very important for the American people to understand that this is very much a forward-looking investigation in terms of how do we understand what they did and how do we prevent it. Would you agree that that's a big part of our role here?
Yes, sir. And it's not a Republican thing or a Democratic thing. It really is an American thing. They're going to come for whatever party they choose to try and work on behalf of. And they're not devoted to either, in my experience. They're just about their own advantage, and they will be back.
I'll tell you, one of the more disturbing things was the next question I'll play for, and it was asked a couple of times. I probably have it somewhere else in here, too. But Senator Martin Heinrich of Nevada asked this question, which I found really disturbing, frankly.
Did the president, in any of those interactions that you've shared with us today, ask you what you should be doing or what our government should be doing or the intelligence community to protect America against Russian interference in our election system?
I don't recall a conversation like that.
Never.
No.
Never. Trump never asked, what do we do about the Russians? This is obviously a problem. He did go on to say, I had those discussions with the Obama administration, but never with Trump. They seem unconcerned. Those are my words, not his. But let's back up a little bit. So obviously the biggest allegation, the biggest smoking gun, if there is a smoking gun, was Comey's assertion that Donald Trump asked him to let the whole Flynn thing go. Here's that story.
Director, when the president requested that you, and I quote, let Flynn go, General Flynn had an unreported contact with the Russians.
Whoops.
Which is an offense. And if press accounts are right, there might have been discrepancies between facts and his FBI testimony. In your estimation, was General Flynn at that time in serious legal jeopardy? And in addition to that, do you sense that the president was trying to obstruct justice or just seek for a way for Mike Flynn to save face, given he had already been fired?
General Flynn at that point in time was in legal jeopardy. There was an open FBI criminal investigation of his statements in connection with the Russian contacts and the contacts themselves. And so that was my assessment at the time. I don't think it's for me to say whether the conversation I had with the president was an effort to obstruct. I took it as a very disturbing thing, very concerning.
Disturbing.
But that's a conclusion I'm sure the special counsel will work towards to try and understand what the intention was there and whether that's an offense.
And so that was the extent of the questions he didn't answer. There were few, but it was nothing like yesterday where they just wouldn't answer a single question. Comey just wouldn't draw any conclusions. He wouldn't go so far as to say this was an obstruction of justice, but I think he let his opinion be known in not so many words. By the way, I apologize. Martin Heinrich is from New Mexico, not Nevada. And I think I made that same mistake yesterday. So I apologize for that. I knew something was wrong there. It just didn't seem right. But so there you have it. I actually lived in New Mexico for 5 minutes. This was a news-making answer about what made Comey hold that press conference regarding Hillary Clinton and the investigation into her. Bill stepped in it.
Was your decision influenced by the Attorney General's tarmac meeting with the former President Bill Clinton?
Yes, in a conclusive way. That was the thing that capped it for me, that I had to do something separately to protect the credibility of the investigation, which meant both the FBI and the Justice Department.
Were there other things that contributed to that you can describe in an open session?
There were other things that contributed to that. One significant item I can't. I know the committee's been briefed on. There's been some public accounts of it, which are nonsense, but I understand the committee's been briefed on the classified facts. Probably the only other consideration that I guess I can talk about in an open setting is that at one point the Attorney General had directed me not to call it an investigation, but instead to call it a matter, which confused me and concerned me. But that was one of the bricks in the load that led me to conclude I have to step away from the department if we're to close this case credibly.
That's something you're going to hear the Republicans go off on, that Loretta Lynch directed him to call it a matter, not an investigation into Hillary Clinton. And you know what? Rightfully so. That whole thing was a giant clusterfuck. It never should have happened. And, well, how things might be different today had Bill Clinton never gotten on that plane with Loretta Lynch. Now, James Comey, we know that he took these copious, wrote memos after every meeting with Donald Trump. What I didn't know until today was that he didn't do that with anybody else.
What was it about that meeting that led you to determine that you needed to start putting down a written record?
A combination of things. I think the circumstances, the subject matter, and the person I was interacting with. Circumstances first, I was alone with the President of the United States, or the President-elect, soon to be President. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the President, President-elect personally. And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
And he did. He wrote them down, and he said he kept notes. Some of them were classified, some of them were not. And the reason that's an important distinction, we'll get to in a moment. You know what? We'll do it now because, what's her name? Susan Collins of Maine asked about, he told the story about sharing a memo after Donald Trump tweeted about the, that there were tapes.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes, too. And we're not the only ones saying that. After Trump tweeted about the possibility of tapes, Comey decided he needed to take a little bit of action.
Did you show copies of your memos to anyone outside of the Department of Justice?
Yes.
And to whom did you show copies?
The president tweeted on Friday after I got fired that I better hope there's not tapes. I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night, because it didn't dawn on me originally, that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And so I asked a close friend of mine to do it.
And was that Mr. Wittes?
No.
Who was that?
a good friend of mine who's a professor at Columbia Law School.
Wittes is the one who went out and did all those interviews, so they didn't get further into that. Although Jason Leopold did tweet that he knows who that professor is, and he's like, all right, everyone's going to be calling him. So that's something that Kasowitz, Trump's lawyer, has picked up on, and now he's calling Comey a leaker, saying he was leaking classified information. Comey made an important distinction. He said some of the memos... And he didn't say how many, but there were some of the memos, so I'm guessing at least two, were classified. But that one about asking to let go of the Flynn thing, he said he specifically wrote in a way so it would not be classified because he knew that it would come up at some point or should come up at some point. So, yes, Kasowitz, his statement, aside from having the word president misspelled in the very first line, I kid you not, I couldn't make this stuff up, got a lot of other things wrong, that being one of them. As for, when he was asked essentially to drop it with Flynn, this was a question from Senator Risch.
Boy, you nailed this down on page 5, paragraph 3. You put this in quotes. Words matter. You wrote down the words so we can all have the words in front of us now. There's 28 words there that are in quotes, and it says, quote, I hope, this is the president speaking, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go. Now, those are his exact words. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you wrote them here and you put them in quotes?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for that. He did not direct you to let it go.
Not in his words, no.
He did not order you to let it go.
Again, those words are not in order.
No. He said, I hope. Now, like me, you probably did hundreds of cases, maybe thousands of cases, charging people with criminal offenses. And, of course, you have knowledge of the thousands of cases out there that where people have been charged. Do you know of any case where a person has been charged for obstruction of justice, or for that matter, any other criminal offense, where they said or thought they hoped for an outcome?
Wow.
I don't know well enough to answer. And the reason I keep saying his words is I took it as a direction.
Right.
I mean, this is the President of the United States with me alone saying, I hope this. I took it as this is what he wants me to do. Now, I didn't obey that, but that's the way I took it.
So Rich is going through semantics there. He's saying, well, his words, he said, I hope. Nobody's ever been convicted saying, I hope you'll give me your money, please. And Comey made it very clear. I took it as a directive, basically saying, yeah, I took it as directed, ordered in his words. Wasn't directed or ordered in his words, but he said, that's how I took it. That's how I heard it. As for the dinner and the whole loyalty question.
My common sense told me that what was going on is either he had concluded or someone had told him that you've already asked Comey to stay and you didn't get anything for it. And that the dinner was an effort to build a relationship. In fact, he asked specifically of loyalty in the context of asking me to stay. And as I said, what was odd about that is we'd already talked twice about it by that point, and he'd said, I very much hope you'll stay. I hope you'll stay. In fact, I just remembered sitting here, a third one, when you've seen the picture of me walking across the blue room, what the president whispered in my ear was, I really look forward to working with you. So after those encounters...
And that was just a few days before your flight.
Yeah, that was on the Sunday after the inauguration. The next Friday, I have dinner. And the president begins by wanting to talk about my job. And so I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, three times you've already asked me to stay or talked about me staying. My common sense, again, I could be wrong, but my common sense told me what's going on here is he's looking to get something in exchange for granting my request to stay in the job.
Boy, to me, that sounds like quid pro quo. That's what it is. You want your job? I need something. I need loyalty from you. And I hope you'll let it go. This whole thing with Flynn, we'll let it go, right?
Did you at any time urge former FBI Director James Comey in any way, shape, or form to close or to back down the investigation into Michael Flynn? And also, as you look back...
No.
Next question.
One of them is lying. Now, the one today, James Comey, was under oath. Not only does Trump rarely ever answer a question, that was one of, what, two questions he took from the press with when a foreign dignitary was in town. And the way he answered it makes me not trust him very much. All right, let's go to the phones. Hi, who's this from the 515 area code?
Hey, this is Sanjeeva from Ames, Iowa.
Hey, Sanjeeva, what's up?
Yeah, in England there's an election going on, and actually the polls have huge queues. My friend, I've been kind of helping with the English election using Skype, teaching Jeremy Corbyn's people how to text bank and phone bank using some of the software.
Did you hear yesterday's show?
Yes, I did.
Okay, because we know there was an election there today.
There's huge queues at the polls, and also I was talking to some people in Lincolnshire, which is kind of a swingy seat, and they noticed that there's more people who came in the first 50 minutes of polling than showed up on the entire day that time in 2015. So it's looking good, but fingers crossed, right?
Fingers crossed, and we'll keep checking. You know, we had Dennis Campbell on yesterday. He actually sent me a file that shows when each district. I don't know what they call them over there, but when each voting district usually reports their votes. I love that they have long lines, queues, and they all vote on paper ballots, and all those paper ballots are hand-counted. And guess what? I'm sure they're much more accurate than ours are. By the way, they also know if they count, you know, there are 473 ballots cast in one district, they make sure that 473 votes are counted. Very different than what we've got over here.
Yeah, we should also thank Jim Messina for his incompetence. He's one of Rahm Emanuel's people who fucked up the DCCC. He's been working with the Tory Party.
Has he,
and
really?
The Tory Party just collapsed miserably.
Well, let's hope. It's not over till it's over.
Yeah, I mean, Theresa May, let's just say, she's had the worst qualities of Hillary Clinton plus Paul Ryan's economic policy.
Yep, I hear
you.
You
want to put it in an American perspective.
All right, Sanjeeva, I'm going to run because I want to get through this Comey stuff today, and we got Howie Klein coming up, too. So thanks for the call. I want to, you know, run through as much of this as possible while we have time. Let's see. Here's another one from Martin Heinrich of New Mexico.
There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever.
He asked, tell us what is so important. You know, there's a lot of people saying Donald Trump says the whole Russia story is fake news. It's a hoax. And so he asked him point blank, tell us why is this Russia investigation so important?
There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever. The Russians interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts. And it was an active measures campaign driven from the top of that government. There is no fuzz on that. It is a high confidence judgment of the entire intelligence community. And the members of this committee have seen the intelligence. It's not a close call. That happened. That's about as unfake as you can possibly get. And it's very, very serious, which is why it's so refreshing to see a bipartisan focus on that, because this is about America, not about any particular party.
So that was a hostile act by the Russian government against this country.
Yes, sir.
A hostile act. And again, and that was followed up by the question I played before, which was whether or not Donald Trump then ever asked, what do we do to fight back against this hostile act? Never once, not a single question, which just shows how inept this man is. Well, that and a number of other things. One more question, just to show, you know, you've got Kasowitz, Trump's attorney, alleging that Comey was the one lying. Listen to this exchange with Angus King.
In his interview with Lester Holt on NBC, the president said, I had dinner with him. He wanted to have dinner because he wanted to stay on. Is this an accurate statement?
No, sir.
Did you in any way initiate that dinner?
No. He called me at my desk at lunchtime and asked me, was I free for dinner that night? And called himself and said, can you come over for dinner tonight? And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, six work. I think he said six first. And then he said, I was going to invite your whole family, but we'll do that next time. I wanted you to come over. And is that a good time? I said, sir, whatever works for you. And then he said, how about 6:30? And I said, whatever works for you, sir. And then I hung up and had to call my wife and break a date with her. I was supposed to take her out to dinner that night.
That's one of the all-time great excuses for breaking a date.
Yeah. In retrospect, I love spending time with my wife. I wish I'd been there that night.
That's one question I'm not going to follow up, Mr. Cohen. But in that same interview, the president said, in one case I called him and in one case he called me. Is that an accurate statement?
No.
Did you ever call the president?
No.
How about
Kamala? No.
Okay. We're going to take a break here. We'll check out what's news and come back on the other side with Howie Klein next.
I read the news today. Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats and NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers refused to answer questions from the Senate Intelligence Committee on Wednesday about whether Donald Trump had ever asked them to downplay possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials during the November election.
We have press reports of not once but twice that the President of the United States asked you to either downplay the Russia investigation or to directly intervene with Director Comey. Can you set the record straight about what happened or didn't happen?
Well, Senator, as I responded to a similar question during my confirmation and in a second hearing before the committee, I do not feel it's appropriate for me to, in a public session in which confidential conversations between the President and myself, I don't believe it's appropriate for me to address that in a public session.
So today I am not going to talk about theoreticals. I am not going to discuss the specifics of any interaction or conversations I may or may not. That I may or may not have had with the President of the United States, but I will make the following comment. In the 3+ years that I have been the director of the National Security Agency, to the best of my recollection, I have never been directed to do anything I believe to be illegal, immoral, unethical, or inappropriate. And to the best of my recollection, during that same period of service, I do not recall ever feeling pressured to do so.
I am not asking for classified information. I am asking whether or not you have ever been asked by anyone to influence an ongoing investigation.
I understand, but I'm just not going to go down that road in a public forum.
Why are you not answering these questions? Is there an invocation by the President of the United States of executive privilege? Is there or not?
Not that I'm aware of.
Then why are you not answering
our
questions?
Because I feel it is inappropriate, Senator.
What you feel isn't relevant, Admiral. What you feel isn't the answer. The answer is, why are you not answering the questions? Is it an invocation of executive privilege? If there is, then let's know about it. If there isn't, answer the questions.
I stand by the comments I've made.
So I'm not satisfied with I do not believe it is appropriate or I do not feel I should answer. I want to understand a legal basis. You swore that oath to tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and today you are refusing to do so. What is the legal basis for your refusal to testify to this committee?
I'm not sure I have a legal basis, but I'm more than willing to sit before this committee and during its investigative process in a closed session and answer your question.
At one point, the junior senator from California, Kamala Harris, was shut down by committee chair Richard Burr when she attempted to get an answer from Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein about assurances that Special Counsel Robert Mueller would be able to operate with complete independence.
Yes or no, sir?
He has the full independence that is authorized by those regulations.
Are you willing to do as has been done before?
Would the senator suspend? The chair is going to exercise its right to allow the witnesses to answer the question, and the committee is on notice to provide the witnesses the courtesy, which has not been extended all the way across, extend the courtesy for questions to get answered.
Mr. Chairman, respectfully,
Mr. Rosenstein,
I would point out that this witness has joked with as we all have,
the senator
his ability to filibuster.
Mr. Rosenstein, would you like to thoroughly answer
the question?
Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. Sir, I'm not joking. The truth is, I have a lot of experience with these issues.
With that, Rosenstein filibustered for almost 2 minutes without ever answering the question, prompting Senator Harris to quip.
Senator
so Cornyn. Is that a no?
As the hearing concluded, Chairman Richard Burr admonished the four witnesses.
At no time should you be in a position where you come to Congress without an answer.
Former FBI Director James Comey taking the hot seat today in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee, where he'll answer questions about the president's efforts to influence the FBI's investigation into Russia's interfering with the 2016 presidential elections. Comey's opening statement was made public on Tuesday afternoon, confirming some of the details we'd read about in explosive news stories, including Trump seeking a pledge of loyalty from the FBI director and an end to the investigation into Michael Flynn, Trump's former national security advisor. Comey did confirm the president's contention that he told Trump on at least one occasion in early January that he wasn't under investigation at that time.
Comey first met with Trump on January 6th to let him know about some so-called salacious intelligence, PP tape, saying he agreed to the meeting alone to minimize the potential embarrassment to the president-elect. Remember, this was back when we thought it was possible for him to feel embarrassment. And at one of their meetings, evidently, Comey writes that Trump said he had nothing to do with Russia, had not been involved with hookers in Russia.
Following the release of Comey's opening statement, Trump's personal attorney, Mark Kasowitz, released a statement saying, quote, "The president is pleased that Mr. Comey has finally publicly confirmed his private reports that the president was not under investigation in any Russian probe. The president feels completely and totally vindicated. He is eager to continue to move forward with his agenda," end quote. Oh, there's so much that statement didn't address. Comey's opening testimony Thursday morning is followed by a closed session Thursday afternoon. And that's some of what's news for today. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, I hope you'll consider a contribution. What's News and The Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener supported, and we can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Aw, hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole.
How you doing today?
Pretty good.
Good. Well, did you spend the morning watching the Comey hearing as I did?
I watched a lot of it. I watched the beginning, and then, you know, when morons came on who I knew would ask dumb things and didn't matter, I would go back to my writing, and then I'd come back again. So I could laugh at John McCain and
My God. You know, I spent the first half hour really going through clips of what went on. I thought Comey did a good job. John McCain, I actually didn't pull anything of him because I think he's too far gone. I feel bad making fun of him at this point. I think there's really something wrong with him.
I can understand that. I mean, the poor old guy, he's lost it. He's not on the committee, so I don't know why he was even there. I guess he just wandered in and they let him speak.
Are you sure?
It reminded me of those old clips that we used to see on the TV news of, what was his name, Vincent Gigante, the Genovese family mall boss.
Uh-huh.
He used to walk around New York in a bathrobe and pajamas, making believe he was insane. He wasn't really insane, but he got away for decades by pleading insanity. He got away with going to prison. Eventually, they put him in prison. In fact, what I love about that is that the guy who put him in prison, the prosecutor who put Gigante in prison, despite walking around like John McCain all those years, that prosecutor was just hired to put Mueller to put Trump in prison. That's his new job.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ooh. Mueller just hired him. He brought him in. And, you know, not only did he – I mean, he – this guy is amazing. Not only – his name is Weitzman. Not only did he put Gigante in prison, he also put what's his name, that other huge mafia boss from the other New York family. I can't remember his name now. But he's responsible for prosecuting the two biggest mafia criminals in contemporary times and putting them both in jail.
Wow.
And now he was just drafted by Mueller for his team, and he'll be working on Trump.
Well, that's good to know. The Trump's team, not that impressive. I don't know if you saw Kasowitz.
Yes.
The statement, he misspelled president. He spelled it predizent. And, boy, he just missed everything. I mean, basically alleging that Comey leaked classified communications between the two of them. His memo was not classified. The memo that he gave to his friend to give out to the press was not classified. So this lawyer doesn't seem to know his shit very well.
No, so you probably know this already, but this is just like his like lawyer that sort of is kind of like a bully kind of guy,
mm-hmm.
and more than just he's not. I mean, he is a real lawyer. I shouldn't say he's not a lawyer. He is a lawyer, but he's just one of these guys who tries bullying people and yelling and shouting. I mean, Trump knew that he isn't the right person, and eventually he won't be the person who defends Trump. When Trump is impeached, he'll have a real lawyer. I mean, this guy is a real lawyer, but this guy helps Trump with his real estate and his Trump university nonsense.
He also has ties to a Russian. He also has ties to a Russian bank.
Yeah, he's not going to be Trump's impeachment lawyer. Now, Trump reached out to the four biggest and most powerful law firms in D.C.
Yep.
who are the ones who presumably would be the ones who would be handling this kind of a case, and they all turned him down. Now, the reason that they gave for turning him down publicly was that they said, well, you know, he doesn't listen to lawyers, and you know, we can give him advice, and he's not going to take it. So that's how they got out of it. But what really happened, it was that's all true. But what also happened is they're very aware that Trump doesn't pay lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sue Trump.
Yep.
So if you're a lawyer and you represent Trump, then he won't pay you, and then you have to sue him.
Amazing.
And the law firm that handles his impeachment, we're talking about probably tens of millions of dollars. Trump won't pay it. You know, so I mean, that's kind of disgusting. Who wants to get involved with that? Plus, he won't listen to their advice and just make their job even harder. And they talked about something called reputational risk, which means other clients might not want to use their firm. And what they have talked about publicly, without attribution, is that they would be at a risk of not being able to get the top-rated recruits who come out of the best law schools.
Right.
They might not want to join a firm that's representing Donald Trump in his disgusting impeachment, which, you know, is going to take probably a long time. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be filthy. He'll be doing God only knows what, making things worse and worse and worse. And law firms don't want to get involved with that if they can avoid it. I mean, it's kind of nice if you can make all that money, but then, of course, he doesn't pay.
That's right.
So,
right. He doesn't pay for anything. It's not only lawyers. If you do work on his house, he doesn't pay you. He doesn't pay you, you know, regardless. Anything you do for him, he doesn't pay. He finds a reason not
right.
to pay.
He learned from
amazing.
His father.
There's a debate tonight between John Ossoff and Karen Handel in Atlanta. There was one the other night, and actually I didn't get to play this clip yesterday. Did you hear this clip about their take on a minimum wage?
Yeah, there were two great clips. The minimum wage one is the killer one that could destroy her.
All right, I've got that here. So let me play that, and then I want to talk about a couple of the other races going on. This is John Ossoff and Karen Handel, who are running in the special election for Georgia 6th.
Support a minimum wage increase. Mr. Ossoff starts with you. Yes, I do. The minimum wage should be a living wage. I think we can raise it indexed to the cost of living, because the cost of living varies widely in urban and rural areas and in different states across this country. I think that increase needs to be implemented at a pace that allows business owners to adapt their business plans so they're not shocked. Their business plans are not shocked by a sudden increase in labor costs. But look, if someone's working a 40-hour work week, they deserve the kind of standard of living that Americans expect. That's part of the American dream, and there are too many folks who are having trouble making ends meet.
Minimum wage.
This is an example of the fundamental difference between a liberal and a conservative. I do not support a livable wage.
What
I support is making sure that we have an economy that is robust with low taxes and less regulation, so that those small businesses that would be dramatically hurt if you impose higher minimum wages on them are able to do what they do best. Grow jobs and create good paying jobs for the people in the 6th District.
Right, but she doesn't support, she said, a livable wage. That's a commercial waiting to run.
I think it's probably running already.
I would hope so. Yeah, so I guess they're debating again tonight. That election is a week from Tuesday, the 20th of June, and it's very, very close, isn't it?
It is close. All of the polls that I've seen lately have had Ossoff up as much as 7.
Wow.
But generally 1 or 2 points. So the last poll, he was up by 1 point. But there's never – so that's too close to call.
Mm-hmm.
But it's better to be up by 1 point and too close to call than down by 1 point and too close to call.
That's true. That is true. You have a piece up at Down with Tyranny that's really, really disturbing. It went up on Monday. The headline reads, "Death Threats and GOP Retribution Drive Kim Weaver Out of the Race Against Iowa Racist Steve King." Kim Weaver looked like a great progressive candidate. Blue America endorsed her. She was going to go up against the truly reprehensible Steve King. And now she pulled out of the race. What happened?
Yeah, she was our candidate. She's a Bernie person, and she was she ran last time,
mm-hmm.
and no one else stepped up to the plate to run this time, so she decided she would do it again, even though she knows how tough it is. Although she has raised a great deal of money because of Steve King, he's one of the worst in Congress. And then two things happened. She was getting some serious threats, death threats, and threats against, you know, just generalized threats against her and her home and her family, that kind of thing. And she was uncomfortable with that. But then two things happened after that. First, someone actually went to her house and put some sort of a sign on her lawn that indicated to her that she better get out of town. And that really, you know, she started thinking, like, you know, it's one thing when you get an email, it's another thing, or a phone call, mm-hmm. it's another thing when someone is on your property.
Oh, yeah.
Who means you harm. But then something else happened as well, which hasn't been widely reported in the news, that's very serious. The 4th District of Iowa is the most Republican district in the state. It's the only truly red district in the state. The other,
wow.
The rest of Iowa is kind of purple and swingy. But this district, the 4th, that's a pure red district. And almost all of the local governments are also very Republican. And she works for a government agency, and they she was told that the reason that they cut her agency was in retribution to her going up against Steve King. So in other words, some of her colleagues may have to be laid off because of the race she's running. And so between the threats and the proximity of the threat to her house, and then the fact that this happened at work for something that she really believes in, and then, you know, for them to get a big budget cut that was explained to her as being because of her, she just threw up her hands and said she's done.
Wow.
But to me, this whole story is in a greater context of Republican slouching towards fascism.
Yes.
The violence that we're seeing now is not just in Iowa. There is another story I wrote about. I mentioned in that same piece.
Mm-hmm.
When I started writing the piece, it was just about her. But halfway through my writing it, a Down with Tyranny reader who just figured out I would be writing that piece. She knew I would be writing the piece.
Right.
She wrote to me and she said, I know you're going to be writing a piece about Kim Weaver, but I want you to take a look at this. And she sent me an article about a guy who is running for mayor in Binghamton, New York. So Binghamton, New York is it's a fairly progressive town in a red area, but it's a swingy type of area. It's represented by a Republican now, but recently it was been represented by Democrats as well. But this guy wasn't running for Congress; he was running for mayor against a Republican incumbent, and he started getting death threats again. Phoned in death threats, and he was pretty much ignoring them and just thinking a bunch of idiots, and let it, duck off water off a duck's back. But then his wife started getting death threats as well.
Oh, my God.
And people referring to his children as well. And then he started getting concerned. And then one night after he did an interview with a talk radio host about his campaign, he goes to the babysitter to pick up his 3-year-old daughter. And he's walking from his car to his front door holding his daughter, and there's some guy in a strange, meaning unfamiliar, pickup truck sitting there, and he starts cursing at him and calling him, liberal and dirty words, and took a soda can, a full soda can, and threw it at him. So the guy went to protect his child by sheltering her with his own body, and then he got hit with the soda can.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So that's when he decided that he's going to withdraw from the race as well, which is very unfortunate because now this reactionary mayor has no opponent, this Republican Trump-supporting mayor. So that was bad. That was, the second part of that post that I put up on Monday. And then something else happened that really disturbed me a great deal. So let me give a little background here.
Okay.
So in California, yes, on Tuesday, I'm just going to give – this is a little off the topic, but I just want to explain what I'm talking about. We had a congressional race,
mm-hmm.
and a really good progressive one named Jimmy Gomez.
Right.
And Jimmy – a lot of people didn't take it that seriously because they said, well, it was 2 Democrats. Did it really matter? And, yes, it really did matter in a very big way because Jimmy Gomez is a proven – progressive. He has been in the legislature passing incredible legislation. He's really, really good. He's, going right into the progressive caucus. He will be more than just someone who votes well. He will be someone who will be passing good legislation the same way he did in Sacramento here in California. But the point is that here in and the person who ran against him was a so-called ex-Republican who was supported by the Republican Party. So, yes, it was 2 Democrats, but one of them wasn't a Democrat. He had a D next to his name, but he's a Republican.
Right.
So the opposite is the situation. The opposite kind of situation is in Louisiana. Both states have jungle primaries. So a California jungle primary will often give you 2 Democrats running against each other. A Louisiana jungle primary will give you 2 Republicans running against each other. And that's what happened in the southwest part of Louisiana. They wound up with an open seat, and there were a whole bunch of people running, and the 2 top people who got into the runoff were both somewhat famous Republicans. One of them is famous because he's a state official. He's a mainstream conservative. Now, when I say mainstream conservative, I don't mean he's a moderate. I don't mean he's a liberal. I mean he's a mainstream conservative. So what is that? It means he's not insane.
Right.
He's a conservative. We will disagree with everything that he stands for, but he's not some kind of Trump creature from the deep lagoon. He's not. Oh, let's put it like this: he's not a fascist. He's not a Nazi. He's just a
Republican,
a right wing conservative, right. Mainstream kind of Republican. That's what they like. The guy named Scott Angeli.
Okay.
Everyone assumed he was going to win, but he didn't.
Yeah.
The person who won is this guy. Clay Higgins.
Oh,
what's his name?
Higgins.
Clay Higgins. Yeah, Clay Higgins. He won the runoff, and it was out of the blue. I mean, no one expected it because he is a fascist. That's what he is. he didn't have any – I mean, his career was vigilante. I mean, that's what he is. He's a vigilante.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, he wasn't like a sheriff or a policeman. He fancied himself a volunteer law enforcement person. So anyway, it's not hard to understand what's coming next, which is after the bombing on Sunday in London, there was no bombing. There were no real bombs. There were make-believe bombs.
Right.
So after the stabbing attack and the truck
car
running
attack,
people over
right.
on the bridge, he got all incensed and put up a Facebook page, which I reproduced. I figured it's either down or will be taken down. So I got a screenshot of it and put it up on my blog, where he's saying that he's urging his constituents to go out and hunt down suspected Muslim terrorists.
Oh, my God.
So he wants
I'm reading this. It's horrific. Horrific.
And he wants them to kill them.
Yeah.
He's urging his constituents to kill suspects.
He says...
I mean, this is unbelievable. He wasn't arrested. And what really offended me is that Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, maybe should have said something to him,
mm-hmm.
publicly chastised him. Maybe there should have been a vote. Maybe they should – I mean, at the very minimum, they should have done something to make it clear to this guy, this is not allowed. This is not how a congressman behaves. But they didn't. They didn't say a thing.
Wow.
There's been nothing about it. And as far as I know, other than in Louisiana, this isn't being covered by the media.
I hadn't heard a word about it until I read this. Now, the Facebook post you put up there, I want to share what this guy wrote, because this is this is the kind of thing Facebook should take down. He wrote, "The free world, all of Christendom, is at war with Islamic horror. Not one penny of American treasure should be granted to any nation who harbors these heathen animals. Not a single radicalized Islamic suspect should be granted any measure of quarter. Their intended entry to the American homeland should be summarily denied. Every conceivable measure should be engaged to hunt them down. Hunt them, identify them, and kill them. Kill them all for the sake of all that is good and righteous. Kill them all." Signed, Captain Clay Higgins.
He's a congressman. The guy is a congressman.
Oh my God.
And he wrote that on Sunday or Monday. Refuses to apologize, by the way. He's perfectly happy with it. He thinks it's great. Has no problems with it. Can't understand why people don't like it.
Wow.
He's talking about suspects. In other words, if you suspect someone is a Muslim terrorist, if you suspect them, you should go and kill them, hunt them down and kill them. That's what he's saying.
Instead of see something, say something, you know, call the authorities, say, hey, my neighbor is acting kind of squirrely. There's something weird going on over there. He's saying hunt them down and kill them.
Yes.
Wow.
That's what the Republican Party is today.
Well,
How is Ryan not saying something about this?
Did he not say anything about what's the guy's name in Montana? The reporter beater guy who wound up donating $50,000 to the Society for Independent Journalists or something like that.
The guy is a billionaire. Him donating $50,000 is like you donating 50 cents.
Right. Oh, God. So it's nothing. And Paul Ryan, was he censured or chastised or anything for beating down a reporter?
No, because he's not a member. In other words, Paul Ryan said something about, said something asinine about it. He didn't really chastise him. Instead, he said, people lose their tempers. This isn't the way we should behave. You know, he said something, not very strong. But the guy's not a member of the House, so it's not really Paul Ryan's business to get into something more substantial. This guy, Clay Higgins, he is a congressman. He's a sitting congressman. He's there every day, sitting and voting.
That's
always badly. I should.
I'm sure.
Guess.
What a shocker! Oh my God!
But he, this is. I would say this is part of Ryan's job as the Speaker. To do something about this. This is very, very serious, because this speaks to the direction that the Republican Party is dragging the country into. It's fascism.
Yes.
I mean,
it's exactly
and here
what
you
it
have,
is.
You know, Steve King denied that that he says he does not believe that Kim Weaver was threatened. He doesn't believe it.
Right. So he's blaming the Democrats. In a tweet, he wrote, "I wanted Kim Weaver in the race, not out. Democrats drove her out of the race, not ours. Death threats likely didn't happen, but a fabrication." That's how Steve King deals with it. Rather than telling his supporters, "Chill out, we don't want violence," which is what a responsible politician would say.
Yes, he could have said that. He could have said, "Look, I beat her last time by a huge number. I'm going to beat her again by a bigger number." He could have said that.
Yeah.
No violence. But he doesn't say that. He says she made it up, which further incites crazy people like himself.
God, Howie, these are scary times.
And then you've got this guy, carrying his 3-year-old daughter, gets a can thrown at him. I mean, thank God it didn't. It could have killed the little girl.
Yes, easily.
Literally.
Yeah.
Hit her in the head.
Yep.
Oh, everyone knows a full can of soda can do some real damage.
Yep. Wow.
And then you get this guy in Louisiana, a member of Congress. That's what I can't get over. This guy is a member of Congress.
Well, you know, you have
constituents to hunt down and kill people they suspect of being Muslim terrorists.
That's sickening.
Or Muslim something.
But you got to look. It goes all the way to the top, because in Trump, you have a guy who still to this day hasn't said a word about the three guys who were killed in Portland, or two of them were killed. One, I think, is still critical. Coming to the aid of two young Muslim women who were being hassled by a neo-Nazi. And the guy pulled out a knife and killed two of them. Trump didn't say a word about it. Not one word. They're taking their cues from the top.
Yes. And imagine if the two young women that were being hassled weren't Muslims. Imagine if they were Christians.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who were hassling them were the guy who was hassling them was a Muslim. Imagine a Muslim hassling and then the Muslim killing some guys that came to their aid.
Oh,
imagine
yeah.
what Trump would be doing now.
Oh.
It doesn't take much to figure out what he'd still be carrying on about this. He'd be sitting on the roof of buildings with a bullhorn screaming about it.
Yeah. Oh, exactly right. Exactly right. We live in an opposite world. Nothing makes sense anymore. And I'm hoping you know, Howie Klein, at the beginning, you were talking very confidently about, you know, the lawyer that's going to be representing Trump in his impeachment. I hope it gets to that. I worry. He's still somewhere like a 80% approval rating among Republicans.
It's dropping. His approval rating is dropping. It's the lowest. The new Quinnipiac poll came out today. It was at the lowest it's ever been. Now we're in 34% territory.
Ooh. Ooh.
For Bob approval rating. So that you know, right now Trump has a higher disapproval than Nixon did mm-hmm. at the height of Watergate.
Yeah.
We're getting there. It's still going to take some time. But, you know, when people say, oh, we have a long way to go before the 2018 elections.
No, we don't.
And everything changed. The reality is things will change. Of course they will. But there's every indication that they're just going to get worse and worse for the Republicans. They're not going to turn around. They're not going to get better. There's much more of a chance that they'll be much worse, because that's the trend line. I mean, last week, Trump was at 36. The week before that, approval. The week before that, it was at 39% approval. It keeps going down. It's not going up and down. It's going down.
Good. Let it keep going down and let him go down along with it. Howie Klein, we're out of time.
Oh, okay.
Our time flies.
Next time we get together, we can talk about the Republicans that are starting to flee from Trump, the House Republicans who are realize that their careers are in jeopardy and they're running in the other direction.
Sounds great. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and the Blue America PAC. Thanks, Howie.
Nicole.
Bye-bye. Tomorrow, we're going to have a little fun because I think we need to lighten things up a bit. Boca Brittany Summers will be here. We're going to have fun with song parodies. I'm drawing a blank on my guest's name. Lauren Mayer will be here. She does amazing song parodies. We're going to have fun because it's Friday and the weekend is going to be here and we need to chill out a little bit, okay? All right. With that, happy Thursday, everyone. I'm going to leave you with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. And I'll see you tomorrow right here, NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's Thursday, June 8, 2017.
We are one canoe, one island, one planet. We cannot afford to mess this up.
As Trump steps back from the Paris Climate Agreement, Hawaii steps up.
California is all in.
Defiant California partners with China on clean energy. Switching from coal to solar would save 52,000 lives a year. Plus,
rooftop solar will shine again in Nevada after spending nearly 2 years under a dark cloud.
Elections have consequences. Nevada Democrats reverse anti-solar regulations.
All of that good news and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Is it hot in here, or did I just pull out of the Paris Accord? Zabinga!
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, even North Korea has condemned Donald Trump for withdrawing from the landmark UN Paris Climate Agreement, calls global warming, quote, one of the gravest challenges humankind is facing today. North Korea's Ministry of Foreign Affairs called Trump's decision, quote, short-sighted and silly.
Ooh.
And said that the United States shows, quote, ignorance of the fact that it is in their own best interests. That's North Korea.
Yeah, I know.
Reminding me of what Bill Maher said about this over the weekend.
Really? The country that is always threatening to blow up the planet wants to save the planet.
And on top of that, the top U.S. diplomat stationed in China has resigned from his post over Trump's decision to withdraw from the U.N. Paris Climate Agreement. Acting U.S. Ambassador to China David Rank reportedly told embassy staff that he could not support and would not implement Trump's climate policies as, quote, a parent, a patriot, and a Christian.
Well, he's just winning everywhere, isn't he?
Seems like it. Meanwhile, Hawaii has become the first U.S. state to pass laws to legally implement the global accord, with new legislation to accelerate policy mechanisms to reduce Hawaii's greenhouse gas emissions. At a press conference in Honolulu on Tuesday, Hawaii's Democratic Governor David Ige noted Hawaii is already grappling with climate change impacts like extreme weather, coral bleaching, and rising sea levels, and that managing Hawaii's natural resources is critical to the state's economy.
As an island state, we are especially aware of the limits of our natural environment. We have a kuleana, a responsibility to Malama, to steward our island home.
Not to be outdone, California Governor Jerry Brown was in China this week to sign a partnership agreement with the Chinese government to coordinate with the government on clean energy technology, carbon capture and storage, and carbon emissions trading.
California is all in. 100% in meeting the Paris agreements, in fact, going beyond. We only do that if we can work with China, Chinese provinces, to get the job done.
So Trump's decision is definitely a setback that will cost pretty much everyone on the planet precious time in the race against accelerating climate impact. But there may be a silver lining if it ultimately ends up galvanizing more action.
Maybe we should thank Donald Trump for helping the world rally around the Paris Climate Agreement. Something that many people in this country, at least, had no idea what it even was until Trump left it.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration has been repeating debunked, inaccurate estimates of the costs of the Paris Agreement.
Not my Trump administration.
But ignoring the benefits of transitioning to clean energy, including the fact that it will save lives. According to a new study out this week from Michigan Technological University, swapping out coal in generating electricity and replacing it with solar energy in the United States would prevent 52,000 premature deaths in the United States caused by coal's air pollution every year. To put that into perspective, the U.S. coal industry employs 51,000 people total, but switching to renewable energy would save 52,000 lives.
Per year.
Per year. Finally, in Nevada, the state legislature has rolled back its rollback of solar incentives just a year and a half after its Public Utility Commission phased out financial incentives for rooftop solar owners that gutted the state's solar industry.
That's great news.
It is. Expected to be signed by Republican Governor Brian Sandoval. The legislation restores net metering rates for homeowners to sell their excess energy back to the grid and requires the state's utilities to get 40% of their electricity from renewable sources by 2030.
It's interesting because this comes after the Republicans had taken control of the state legislature in the previous session. Now, Democrats are back in power, and they are rolling back this ridiculous regulation that blocked rooftop solar in Nevada. Nevada, one of the sunniest states in the nation.
Elections have consequences.
Yes, they do. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. And you